Right ahead and fuck yourself, buddy.
What, you didn't care for the way I started this one?
No, I gotta follow that shit,
Holmes. By me just yelling, podcasting, go! Nobody can see what I'm doing.
I know.
I just sound like an asshole.
It's just disconcerting.
I know, because you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm really putting effort in. I really put in the character work to really just cram it right up your ass, right up top.
You know, I should have pre-lubed, but I did not think ahead.
Nope. After the just casual conversation that we had before hitting record, you didn't expect that, did you?
Abso-fucking-lutely not.
Had that ace in my back pocket.
Whew, so should have kept it there.
Hey, James, since I don't get to really talk to anybody else about movies and stuff, and there's no reason that we ever would or should cover this, you know what's actually not bad? Insidious 3.
Really?
Yes. It's not good by any means. It's kind of pretty shitty, but as compared to like the original Insidious, like I thought it actually, there was a few parts that I thought were okay. The setup is like this college student, her mother died, so she tries to do this seance and she goes and visits Lin Shaye.
Okay.
She opened the door to whatever world. Okay,
whatever. That was the first fuck up, going to Lin Shaye.
Like, okay, whatever, it's fine. And she's standing in an alley and like, kind of like sees one of these fucking ghouls or whatever that she's having these slight visions of and gets fucking just wrecked by a car.
Damn.
And dies for a little bit. And that's how like the other world invades like her. Like that's actually not a bad setup like in total. Like, oh yeah, she just did it a little bit, but hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to jump the shark and she's going to die for a little bit. And that's how she's haunted.
There you go.
And there's actually one really interesting shot too, where she goes and looks out a window and like the camera follows her over the shoulder. So it does like a
drop shot,
like a tip.
Yeah.
Over the side, and there's nothing there, and she leans back, and it does it again, and there's the ghoul there. And yeah, it's a CGI stupid-looking monster, but it's an interesting shot, at least.
Hmm.
Like, it very much surprised me. Insidious 3.
Damn.
Yeah, because it was just one of those, like, I got nothing else that, like, I don't want to start something that I want to watch because I'm not going to. I'm going to fall asleep. And then I sat and watched more of Insidious 3 than I really wanted to. And then it finally got boring and stupid and I fell asleep. But there's a few interesting things that it did. And I thought it was worth mentioning.
They made 3 of those.
Oh, dude, there are so many more.
Really?
There's like 6.
6?
Yeah.
Wow.
Remember, this was before the dude from Troll Hunter guy. Autopsy of Jane Doe?
Could be, I don't know.
Nope, again, that was the Troll Hunter guy.
Okay, you just said that.
I sure did. Taking of Deborah Logan.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he did one of those.
Well, I might see that because I liked his visual style.
Yeah, it's fine. He made something else recently. Is Adam Robitaille, I believe is his name. The Deborah Logan guy. He made something else recently that I saw and went, ooh, that looks
rough.
No, thank you.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I don't know. You seen anything that surprised you lately?
No, I've been so busy just juggling the business stuff. I barely see straight at this point.
I say, and also to anyone out there listening, anyone who's a real action movie fan, I still say Reacher, not bad.
The series?
Yes.
I fucking want to see that so bad.
Yep. Every single problem in that show is solved by, well, he's fucking huge.
That is.
And it rules.
But that's exactly, and again, no offense to your beloved Tom Cruise, but having been a fan of the book, that guy is Reacher.
Yeah.
Down to his mannerisms, everything. That guy must have really read all the books and really got into it because, you know, the clips that I've seen, I'm like, that is exactly how I pictured him. Down to everything. Boom. So.
Man, speaking of bullshit based on books. Hey, everybody, welcome to Horror Vomit, where we talk about horror movies so you don't have to. My name is Chris Pfaff, and I'm one of your hosts.
And I'm James Marino. I'm the other one of your hosts.
And take two.
Mm-hmm.
Slate it. We oopsed, and we already did this one once, so we're trying to do it again.
Oh, boy.
Here we go. Mm-hmm. 2017's It. Chapter 1. Written by Chase Palmer, Kerry Joji Fukunaga, and Gary Dauberman. Directed by Andy Muschietti. Oh, boy. I feel like I botched a few of those names.
What are you going to do?
Starring Jaden Martell as Bill, Sophia Lillis as Beverly, and Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise. James.
Yes.
My friend.
Mm-hmm.
We already recorded this, and I, in that, I told you that I thought this movie was meh.
Mm-hmm.
I have changed my position.
Oh, dear.
And I'm guessing you could probably guess in which direction. Yes, your visual cues on this audio medium were in fact correct.
Mm-hmm.
James, I really don't like this movie.
Okay, I get it. I get it. Before I start this one, I will say that I'm a big Stephen King fan. Been reading him since I was way too young to be reading him, just like everybody else. I listen to quite a few Stephen King podcasts. So intermixed with my opinions, with, whatever I've got to say, is probably a lot of uncredited things that I've heard from a lot of podcasts that I listen to. So I apologize in advance. So I just wanted to put that out there beforehand. So,
but you do have intimate knowledge of the book.
Yes.
See, whereas I do not.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really, I guess, found the story It to be compelling, personally. Mm-hmm. I get why it is, but this really just feels like super-duper capitalizing on Stranger Things, another property which I do not like.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a very hard time divorcing them in my mind.
Well, and see, I have not seen Stranger Things. I know it exists. I understand. I've seen clips of it. I can kind of see what you see, but I have no knowledge whatsoever. Except I know that one of the kids in here is also in Stranger Things. Who knew?
Yeah.
But there's similarities, but which came first? Who cares?
Yeah.
Out of all of Stephen King's stuff, this is his most Spielbergian story, I would say, besides Stand By Me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it had to be presented in that kind of way.
See, I don't know. Like, there is still, upon rewatching this, there is exactly one sequence of this film that I think is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of it, again, I think it's boring.
Well,
and one of the biggest reasons that I think it is boring is because, and I will say this again, I can see your budget.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing too, and this makes it very difficult for me to divorce too. In the book, it doesn't go all kids, then all adults. It's flashback, showing part of it, telling part of the story, showing it from adult perspective. Counterpoint, each character, adult, child, it has a different rhythm and it makes more sense. I know that part in my head from the books, okay? So I know that if I watch the whole thing, watch the next one, then I'll see where the flashback should have been. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So you're watching an incomplete piece.
Really feels that way too.
And I think it won't make this great to you, but I think it will piss you off less if you watch the second half of this. And I know it's a big ask, but to complete what we're doing, because again, you're there's a lot of story that has changed. And I personally think for the better. you know, from the book to now, to update it the way they updated it. I think that they handled it beautifully, and I like it because of that too. And again, I like it as a fan of Stephen King, which again you don't have. And again, without the knowledge of Stranger Things, I have a completely different view of this movie.
And a lot of my problems also are just from I don't know how to say this without sounding like an asshole, but from a technical standpoint, but it's not that it's bad. It's that it's how major horror releases are made. And that's so, again, far away from what we usually do here that I think having the kind of money and like free rein to, okay, this is what we want to do and we can spend this amount of money to do it. It really feels like it limited their creativity in a lot of the scares, in that a lot of them, like, there are good things about Pennywise. Like you said, the drooling. Bill Skarsgård does fine as the monster.
I deepened my appreciation for it because I couldn't rewatch the movie. I've watched as many clips as I could. I've watched interviews with Bill Skarsgård. I've watched a whole bunch of stuff to keep it fresh in my mind. And the way he personified it without CGI, anytime it was Bill Skarsgård without CGI,
it's good.
It's great. I agree with you. Let's just stick to this main point. I think the over and misuse of CGI hamstrung this movie for me.
Yeah.
Upon watching parts of scenes, I'm like, oh, they could have done something different. They could have practicaled some of that. They could have left it to your imagination, because the book will tell you things, but it'll also cut away and leave you with whatever horrific vision you have of what you just read.
Yeah, and that is, again, the benefit of the written word, is that you don't have to show it. You just have to describe it. And if you describe it even kind of vaguely, your mind fills in some of the most horrific shit you could possibly imagine.
And another difficulty of adapting Stephen King's work is, one of the joys of reading Stephen King's work, at least for me, because I have off the charts ADHD, is that they go through interior monologues. What the character is thinking while they're walking around is just as important to that story as what they say and do. And it's hard to convey that. They have to put extra. They have to, you know, kind of lean into things that seem unnatural for our visual understanding, you know, like our the symbolism that we're used to. Right. They've got to lean hard into different aspects of it because they need to convey inner monologues that you don't know because you haven't read the book.
Right.
That, you know, if you haven't watched the miniseries, if you haven't done, you know, if this is your only entree into it, it's going to seem odd. And yes, a lot of it is boring. It's not boring to me. Which is, you know, again, I'm seeing it with different eyes. It's not boring to me because I'm watching how it changed yet still honored the book.
And that's what I'm thinking, that it's probably, like, just my problem, that a lot of the scares in this don't interest me. But I do understand that why they're there, because that's what puts butts in seats when you're making a whatever, however much it costs to make this done 2017 it, you know, one of the, you know, Pennywise is huge culturally.
Yes. Well, I will tell you my biggest gripe with this movie, since, you know, we can lean into our gripes and then we can talk about, or at least I can talk about why this movie hits a lot of great spots for me. In the novel, it was like an avatar of like a Cthulhu-esque, like spider-like intelligence, which is part of a greater intelligence. I mean, it's like real, real Cthulhu-like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so the idea is that this thing is like a fear vampire. Pennywise is an aspect, like, can do a few physical things. it's the only way that this thing can get things done. It gets out there and gets into people's heads with this avatar. But the main part of it was that each individual had a different major thing that they were horrifically afraid of. And when Pennywise appeared, Pennywise was just a harbinger that, okay, you see Pennywise and then you get off into whatever that horrific vision it is that's scaring this kid half to fucking death. They're not being scared by Pennywise specifically. Pennywise is like a psychopomp. It's like what shows up. It's like the, you know, the bird that shows up to change the scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the scene changes and you see the fear. They leaned into Pennywise being the aspect of fear, the thing that's causing fear, which obviously they had to have a clown because they had to have something different because Tim Curry fucking owned it.
As he usually does, right, with everything.
So they had to...
see Congo.
Right, so but they had to differentiate. And they did that by making him more... making the clown more animalistic. And there was less of a juxtaposition between Hokey Jokey and Scary. Because even when he was Hokey Jokey, he was fucking terrifying.
So here's my biggest problem with Pennywise. And again, I have not read the book, so... I can disregard all of that, and I'm taking it from what the film is giving me. I don't know what Pennywise's powers are.
Mm-hmm.
In this film, he can seem to just kind of do whatever. Which, again, when you have a, we'll say, villain like that, it makes it uninteresting to me. Because there's no specific thing that he does in this film. Right. Is he... he kills children, some of them, but then he misses these fucking five idiots consistently and then just gets the shit kicked out of him. Like, his powers are never really clearly defined, and that bothers me.
I get what you're saying, and I saw it because I know it. I can't go back and go, was it spelled out or not spelled out? You know what I mean? I can't, you know, objectively tell you that. But I get that. And again, that's what bothers me about their use of Pennywise in this.
Right.
Because Pennywise, again, in the book, his powers were basically had a little bit of the shine. You know what I mean? A little bit of that push.
Mm-hmm.
Had the ability to get in the head to, you know, see what the fear was, to transmit whatever it was from the spider-like hive mind. Okay, this is what we're going to push back, and it was more of that. It was able to do a few physical things. It's like, you know how like ghosts can get enough ectoplasm at certain points to push a door open?
Mm-hmm.
Pennywise was basically that entity's ectoplasm. It gets strong enough, it can do more physical things. Like, actually, that's how Georgie's arm got ripped off, because he was strong enough, had enough of that physical enough to actually pull that arm out.
And I would like to say, at the beginning of this film, during that scene is immediately where I check out. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as you flat out show me the monster in the first, like, 5 minutes of your film, we're suspense now.
Again, this is where the movie misses the mark. And I forgive it because I know the book. Again, I'm giving this movie a lot. Again, it's because I'm a fucking fanboy. Well, you know, what am I going to do? You know, I couldn't objectively do a podcast about Elvis Costello because he's fucking Elvis Costello to me, you know?
Oh, garbage.
Right. But I got into Elvis Costello when I was 11. And, you know, it's one of those things.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So I have difficulty, again, being objective about this film. I think that once you see the rest of it and pull it all together, you'll appreciate this more. You may not ever like it, you know what I mean? But you'll appreciate it more because you'll have all the lore, all the things that your brain's going, the fuck, why did this happen? Why, wait, this is, again, because I know how it's supposed to actually be and what I'd love to see. And this is not my original idea, but I'd love to see is to have somebody do like they did with The Godfather, where they actually put it, where they have it interstitial, where kid part adult, and have it cut the way it's supposed to be in the book. Because that would be cool for me as a fanboy, you know? But getting back to the movie.
But what I'm saying is that when you immediately show me the monster, mm-hmm. and then every time you show me the monster, you just full on show me the monster.
He's not supposed to be the monster in this. It's not supposed to be the monster. It's supposed to be the harbinger of fear.
Okay, but my point is, in the film that we are talking about, mm-hmm. every time they show him, they full on show him. Mm-hmm. And all we ever hear about is other children going missing, but he can't catch these fucking dipshits. I don't know. It's something about that really bothers me. Well,
I thought that they laid enough clues. Now that I think about it, again, it's been a minute since I've watched it. But if you realize that this feeds on fear, these children found strength in their own group to learn that I am not afraid, we are strong enough. And that makes the ectoplasm, or the strength of its ability to physically hurt them, now it's got to be completely mental. They're strong enough that the mental can't hurt them anymore. So the clown is ineffective. And I thought that was clear. Don't be afraid, Georgie. Don't, you know, it's Georgie's not real. It's not real. Don't be afraid. That if he, it even flat out says it feeds on fear. So, I don't know.
So, I do then want to talk about the cast, though.
Oh, yeah. Because
I do think that these kids are pretty goddamn good in this film.
Oh, my fucking God. The casting on this was outstanding.
And I'm going to be honest, Bill has the one scene in this film that really, I think, is the absolute standout of this entire film.
What's that?
And it's sort of near the beginning. It's when he walks into his garage and his dad is sitting in the garage. Yeah. And his dad just looks at him and says, "We've been over this." And again, this is exactly the one part of this film that, after rewatching it again, still I think is just absolutely outstanding. Mm-hmm. So he walks over to this setup of gerbil tubes mm-hmm. that he has set up, and he says, "No, just watch. Turns on the water and drops like a G.I. Joe or something down, mm-hmm. and it pops out, you know, in the barrens. And his dad loses his goddamn mind on him, just yells, you know, "Georgie is dead. Mm-hmm. He's not coming back, and get this cleaned up before your mother sees it." Mm-hmm. And the way that this kid acts, it's so fucking good, because I watched it like 3 times. When he gets yelled at, he has that like thing where his eyes get wide and his head tilts back a little bit, mm-hmm. because it's that, and everybody's had it as a kid, when they hear something very, very true that you do not want to accept as a child, mm-hmm. and it stuns the shit out of you. Mm-hmm. It's so fucking good. The way that kid moves in that scene, just his acting is spot on, and it's the only time in this film that really gets me.
Oh, well, there's a bunch of times, actually, for me, just due to their portrayal of childhood trauma, and just, you know, being existing in the 70s as a child. Great. It was not a treat. You know, jokes about the hose aside, fucking everybody was unattended. Every motherfucking one of us. Unattended. And with all the good and the bad that goes with it. And they portrayed it so good that the first time I watched it, for the first good 45 minutes, I was in a constant anxiety attack. I was actually having like panic attacks, you know, with the chest pains and heavy breathing and palpitations. It portrayed it so good. And part of it is that Stephen King's portrayal of childhood drama and the honesty of childhood conversation, although magnified obviously for art,
right,
the actual thumb on the pulse on how kids actually fucking talk to each other, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the hurt and the everything, and it was the bullying, the, you know, and all these kids were other for whatever reason. And that just, you know, it struck all the chords of why I like Stephen King. And the portrayal in this was just impeccable. So I think I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, the one thing, though, that, and I don't know how to fix it without making this like a 5 hour long movie, is either they need to cut down the amount of characters they're giving screen time, maybe put a few of them together, or give some more people some screen time, because we don't get a lot of, even Richie, one of the principal cast members, we don't see a whole lot of him.
Yes, but again, this is where it makes it difficult, because when it was back and forth book, you know, adult child, you'll see more of Richie. You know, I'm just saying, when you watch the other one, you're going to get that filled in. Or why he didn't get as much screen time now, because his adult Richie does other things, if you feel me.
I say, or Mike was criminally underused. Mike was great.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in what, like 8 minutes of this movie, maybe?
Yeah.
Again, it just I needed something else. If you're going to introduce these characters, I don't care how the book goes, but if you're going to change a whole bunch of these things for the screen, then give us more, or give us more adventure or something, because I'm missing a lot of these characters on screen.
Again, it's a big problem with not going back and forth. That's why I keep saying, oh, wait for the second one. But the important part of that is you have no idea how much more they could have put in here. Yes, it should have been longer. This should have been a good miniseries, you know what I mean? Like a well-produced miniseries, if they wanted to really dig in, because they actually cut out a lot of one person's, and they truncated two people into one person doing, and you know, as a reader, I'm just like, oh, okay, I get what you did, I see what you did there, but I don't like it. You better fix it in a second movie, because in my head is like, all the sins that I've talked about already, I'm hoping are at least solved a little bit in the second one. Maybe they tweaked the writing or something, or they tweaked how they filmed it to make up for whatever they missed from this first one. So again, I'm hoping that the full thing makes up for it.
Right, but my problem here is that we're not talking about the second film and what might be there. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what I have to go by.
Right, and again, a difficulty is that I think that this movie was not made for you.
No, it was not.
It was made for a younger audience. It's filmed in a style that is more appealing to a younger audience. It's bringing people who would not normally be into Stephen King into a movie written by Stephen King. The leaning into the CGI and leaning into the Pennywise is brilliant fucking marketing, because every visual of Pennywise taken separately, out of context, you just look at it and go, I want to see what the fuck else is happening. And that's, again, how it was leaned into. For whatever reason, I forgive it a lot, again, because of my ridiculous fanboyism. You know what I mean?
But here's my problem, too, is that I don't think many of the scares are very good, because when you can lean into your having money to fill in whatever, I feel like they lose a lot of having to be creative.
But the scares that were effective, like the painting,
Again, that would have been great, because Stanley walks into that room and he, you know, stops and looks at that weird fucking painting with the lady with the curvy head. You know, it visually, you understand he doesn't like it. He goes and puts a book away, you know, thunk behind him, picks it up, and the lady's gone. If they'd have cut it at that, that would have been fine. I would have been tickled with that. Instead, they decided to shove a curvy-headed woman chasing him through the... I don't like that.
But, again, to me, that was... it's like a lock stepped in with the book. That's where they should have leaned into all of it, and they should have made all of them either hardly surreal like that, right? and leaned into each child's fear as it really was, like really hit it hard for each one instead of leaning into Pennywise. Because that's what the book was about. That was the idea of what this entity fed on. And again, this movie wasn't made specifically for me either. This movie was made for a new audience of Stephen King. Because I talked to a few people that are younger than me. I was like, oh, you see it? And they fucking loved it, blah, 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 blah. That movie was made for them. You know, it was made for a mass audience, mm-hmm. which is a strike against it for me, traditionally. Yeah. But it's a Stephen King joint, so I fucking give it a lot of leeway. I mean, again, it's impossible. As somebody
who doesn't give a rat's ass about the book, mm-hmm. when I see a sink explode with blood, I look at it and go, oh, well, that looks stupid.
Yeah, but I thought it was absolutely perfect for the theme. I thought it was perfect for it, to me. And again, the inability for the parents to see, for the adults to see, it really leaned into Derry as a toxic place, Derry as its own evil entity. It leaned into a lot of those things. Because it leaned into it that way. It is such a huge visual, and it owes a lot to Carrie, if you think about it.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, everything covered in blood, and they're desperately trying to clean it, but the dad doesn't see it. You know what I mean? And it starts leaning into that. What's real, what's not. These kids are now left with this idea that the adults, A, can't see it, won't help. You know that the kid was going to go home with an initial carved in him and knew nothing was ever going to happen about it.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Because Bauer's dad was on the police force. What the fuck are they going to do?
Right.
And, talk about children's acting. The way the bullies are drawn in the book, 50s greasers, psychotic, yes, but over the top a little. But, you know, drawn as actual human beings.
Right.
And they could have picked, you know, your traditional depiction of bullies on screen even to this day. But this wasn't some overly muscled psycho, you know, write it up, whatever. This was a kid who might have been a little bigger than the other kids, but was absolutely
a problem.
well, let's take a look at one thing. If you've ever been around people who fight or been around like a bar where fights happen, that type of thing, it's not always the size of the person. It's the person who is willing to do whatever it takes to win, whatever that is. And Henry Bowers was that, but intensified due to the abuse of his father.
Right.
To him, the more that he was willing to do to prove his toughness, the less of a threat his father was in his head. And that was portrayed beautifully because you saw, you know, at first when they were just, you know, oh, we're just going to chase the fat kid, ha ha. We're going to scare him, right? No, I'm going to carve my whole fucking name on him. You know?
Yeah, it's intense.
And you saw that.
Okay, I will give it. That kid is really good.
And the sidekicks, right? We always talk about reaction faces. The sidekicks' reactions, like, hey, come on, buddy. No. Are we fucking doing this? Why? Should we walk away? Is he going to get us next? You know, you saw all of these reactions on these two sidekicks' faces.
Yeah, it is a really good what the fuck reaction. And you're right, this is actually a good scene. I am being hard on this film.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very intense. Mm-hmm. And that kid that plays Henry Bowers is phenomenal. And this is where, again, I wish I would have gotten more of him.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt like his character wasn't really, like, filled in. We got just a brief moment of absolute confirmation of abuse at the end before he kills his father in a really metal-ass fucking way, too.
Oh, hell yeah. And, again, that fits in with the theme of the book, which I thought this movie portrays it and updates it beautifully because it took it from 50s to the 80s, you know? And I could connect with the first one because they came back in the 70s, which is when I was a kid, that age. You know what I mean? It was actually right in my wheelhouse. It was like a few years before I was that age, but I knew everything about those references. So, and this one was supposed to take place in 89. I'd just gotten out of the Navy in 89, but I knew the culture and I could see it in a different way. So I thought it was transposed beautifully for me. So I was, part of my enjoyment of this movie is enjoying how they transposed it from these two eras to these two eras. And I thought they did an absolutely beautiful job in their portrayal, the way they depicted it, the music, everything was, spot the fuck on. And the types of bullies had changed down to the female bullies to the male bullies.
Yeah.
But they still managed to keep in my head that 50s and 70s feel. And that's a very deft hand. But you wouldn't see that deftness if you hadn't been familiar with all of them. So I think this movie was trying to throw out as much as they could for as many people.
And I will grant them that is a big task, because no matter what you do, somebody is going to be pissed at you.
Mm-hmm.
There is going to be some legion of Stephen King fans, or new people will not come and see it if it's all just for the fans. Mm-hmm. And, there's none of the what puts butts in seats, the CGI clown unboxing himself from a wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
So, I understand that they needed to do all that. Uh-huh. But if I'm being honest, for me personally, what does not get me is a giant CGI'd pillar with souls floating around it.
And it's fine. I'm going to push back on that a little bit.
Because I don't care for it?
No. I'm going to push back at your madness on that one. Every time they say, we all float down here. And this is the first we're leaning into the otherness of the actual entity. That the entity is not actually Pennywise. That the thing that is causing all of this havoc is not actually that clown. Now, if you're not familiar with it, that turn, I don't know if that turn did anything for you, that, oh shit, it's not actually, Pennywise, it's behind Pennywise.
Right.
I don't.
Fine.
No, I know, but.
Again, my issue is not with the story, James. I'm not saying that my issue is with where the story goes. My issue is that, for my tastes, mm-hmm. personally, just seeing a huge thing with bodies floating around it, that doesn't do it for me. As a film goer, that doesn't interest me.
In the book, remember earlier when I said, hey, we all float down here, everything floats down here? That was really leaned into heavily in the book. It was sewer imagery, water imagery, everything that touched the water. It was very much talking about we all float down here. And in my mind, I forgot about, and this is the point I was making about the actual entity, like the Cthulhu-esqueness of it. To me, it was the one surprise, because in my head, because of the book, I visualized that bodies float, carcasses float. I didn't know how this thing fed, until it manifested. So when they showed the bodies floating, it reminded me of the alienness of this entity as opposed to Pennywise. And I thought that was great. Again, I cannot be objective about this but I loved the visual it gave me, because it changed my thought about it. We all float down here, it floats, but this movie didn't really lean into it. So the floating metaphor, or the way it was floating, proving the alienness of this entity, didn't cross over to you.
No, and it visually isn't interesting to me. It's just not my kind of horror. You obviously, we watch the movies that we watch.
Yeah.
And again, one of my biggest problems is that kind of shit, it just doesn't get me. When Pennywise picks up Sophia Lillis and his head turns into the giant mouth. It's like, all right, man, this is fine, I guess.
Well, and again, I think this is going to kind of turn this on its head a little bit. As a horror movie, this is not a horror fucking movie to me. It's not. It's more of a sci-fi movie to me. It's more of a character. It's more of a, like a, what's it, like a character discovery kind of movie where you watch the interplay of the characters, where, you know, you feel the arc of what the actors are doing. It's more of that. Because Stephen King has the title of horror, a lot of Stephen King's books are, you know, like we talk about a lot, it's horror because horror sells, but it's not. It's a Western. It's a this, it's a that. Or it's a science fiction novel. That's Stephen King to a T. And I really appreciate that about the tone of the movie, you know. So, again, that's a matter of unobjectivity. And the reason I like Stephen King is shown in scenes like that. It kind of leans into Stephen King's novels are all over the place.
Right.
They don't always end well. They always, you know, but they always do something. They're right. Evocative more than linear, if that makes sense.
But again, just visually as a film, like it's just not my kind of movie.
Mm.
So, I mean, take anything that I have to say about it with a grain of salt. But when they're in the sewer and the bully, you know, hits the hairspray lighter and it's just the zombie children, like that doesn't get me.
No, and
in a horror context, like I understand this is what sells. It's going to put butts and seats in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
It super ain't for me, man.
Well, and I disliked the, you know, the harpoon gun little bullshit, because to me they had slingshots with special, you know, rocks or whatever they, I forget, it's been a million years, but the slingshot was really important and symbolic, you know what I mean? And it was more of something a kid is likely to have, because even in the 80s you could get a wrist rocket, and I know a bunch of people, even as late as the 90s, to fucking still had those things.
Yeah, I had a wrist rocket when I was a kid.
Right, so that would, if they were going to update it, they would steal a wrist rocket from somebody, or they would get that, and they would maintain, you know, up-to-date verisimilitude and keep it more with the story, because that to me, you have more than one shot. You had more than, you know, and it could be passed off, you know what I mean? And there was more than one chance, and that's gripes for me, because I do have a lot of gripes with this movie. I just wanted to tell you why I liked it as much as I do, and again, hammer home the fact.
I do think it is good for us to have somebody here who actually will defend it, because otherwise it's just me griping about, look at this big budget horse shit. Why is he getting out of the box like that? That's stupid. You could have done that in a much better way.
I agree that my biggest gripe with this movie is overuse of CGI, misuse of CGI, and overuse of Pennywise. But then again, I'm not a purist. Again, I love 90% of the changes they made. I love the way they updated it. I love the way they cast this movie. I absolutely love the way they changed it. It's a fucking gazebo, Mom. It's a gazebo. It's bullshit. I'm like, hell to the yeah. Because
I could have used a lot more of their weird relationship, too. Mm-hmm. Again, that would have, like, at least deepened me to a few of the characters.
And
their home life, especially, because I think that's one of the things that's really missing. I understand that you have to have the gang together getting into adventures.
Mm-hmm.
I totally get it. But seeing their home life is where it really hits home. And they really only hit it with Bill and Sophia Lillis.
Mm-hmm. And they should have really, really leaned into a lot more, because I can see why they didn't, because Stephen King's views on race and portrayal of racism and things can be troublesome, especially to a modern audience.
Yes.
Okay. So a lot of the things they leaned into more about the character being black, even more into the character being Jewish, a lot more into those aspects of it and the difficulties in a small town, especially a small toxic town like Derry, the difficulties of being not only other for reading or whatever, or having a smart mouth or being black, but having, you know, another religion, being Jewish in a place like that is not easy.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of places where we take for, I can take for granted, because I look as white as I do, I forget that, you know, there are places where it is still difficult if you are Hispanic or Jewish.
Oh, very, very much so.
And I forget, but let's take a look at, this was the
1989, and in very, very rural Maine.
Right.
Which, if anybody out there for some reason doesn't know anything about the United States, racism is everywhere. Mm-hmm. Do not think that just because Maine is way up on the northern coast that it is not just as racist as any town in Alabama.
And let's take a look at right around between, like, say, 83 to about 94. There was a huge spike in white national groups. A lot more skinhead groups. They were militarizing. There were a lot of guys getting out of joints. So there were a lot more of white power nationals. And in the big cities was horrific. They didn't stamp it out, but it rolled into something else. But the rest of it, like, the more rural you get, so in some places where you think it's oddly, you wouldn't be there, and you're just like, holy shit, it's horrible out here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was really, really bad. I mean, it's still not great, but my biggest dream was when you know, the internet was just coming out. I'm like, fucking A, because now everybody's going to be able to get information about how much bullshit this is, right? And people are going to get out of this mindset because they're going to see other people's views. You know, that was my hope.
Yep.
Because I didn't know shit about the internet, but I thought, wouldn't it be great for everybody to have access to as much information as they fucking wanted?
Yep.
Because I am a seeker at heart. I'm always looking. I'm always reading. I'm always trying to find whatever's happening. And, you know, I'm down for whatever's new, you know. And, you know, I always follow that. So I think everybody else is like that. But I, you know.
And then on the flip side of that, to this day, one of the oldest websites on the internet that's still in operation is Stormfront.
Right. And you know, I forget, because back in my day, if you wanted to be all up in that bullshit, you had to fucking go out there and look for it and be about your shit for it. You couldn't just, you know, to get a newsletter, you had to know a guy and you had to talk to a guy and are you all right? Are you not all right? You know, it was like that. And it didn't occur to me that you can get that fucking shit on the internet and give it to anybody who wants to look at it. No questions asked. We don't care who's been on our site. It's just out there. But that didn't occur to me because, you know, fucking the internet, when it was coming out, I'm like, oh shit. Because I used to get my college buddies and I would fucking go and live in their library and just grab shit at random because I could have access to that information. I was excited that I could get on a college website and get in their library and just read for nothing. But I forgot all the bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't occur to me that it would be used for evil, too.
How the hell did we get here, James? What are we talking about now?
Anything but this fucking movie?
Yeah, I've been really trying to avoid it because I got nothing else to say.
Well, my problem is that I'm not traditionally that concise and I'm not traditionally that focused. But because we did it once.
Right.
And I fucking got grainy on listening to interviews. I was just like, boom, boom. Well, this is why I like it. This, and this. And I actually had a counterpoint and said, no, it was just good. You're stupid.
Well, and one of my other biggest problems is just, All right, there's one scene in particular that really fucking bothers me. Okay. If I don't get this out of me,
it's going to irritate me.
It's when they're in the garage and they're flipping through the photos. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it starts flipping really fast by itself. And his mother's hair flips back and it turns into Pennywise in the photos.
Mm.
If they'd have left it at that, that would have been really fucking good. Because Mike kicks over the projector.
Yeah.
And it lands on the floor. And then Pennywise comes up a few more times.
Mm-hmm.
And then a gigantic Pennywise bursts through the screen.
Mm-hmm.
James, it looks ridiculous. And not only that, it is cut like a fucking trailer, and mm-hmm. it bugs the living shit out of me.
Yeah.
Because it'll show the kids running for like 1-2 beats, and then blackness for 1-2 beats, and then back to, it looks like a fucking trailer, and it's in the middle of this film, and it irritates the living shit out of me. And if we did this entire podcast and I didn't bring it up, it would have haunted me till the end of my days.
Okay, I agree with you, but I have come to grips with the fact that I'm a crusty old fucker. And I need you right now, Chris, to accept the fact that you're having a "you kids get off my lawn" moment. And I know it's a rough feeling that you have to accept that, Chris.
It bothers me.
Because that visual is what is drawing the young fans. That trailer cut is built for TikTok kids. Okay? And that is as foreign to me. I can't even fucking figure out Instagram. You'd think it would be easy, right? I don't know. I just got it. I don't know what the fuck it's for. I occasionally accidentally, apparently put shit up there. I don't know what the fuck's up there. People like shit. I'm like, what the? I have no fucking clue, right?
Yeah. So, I don't get into social media.
So I do know that I've seen like those TikTok clips are cut just like that movie trailer cut. And the Pennywise, they do, you know, memes with it and whatever. And that's for them. That's their shorthand. You kids, your fucking weird visuals. God damn it.
Yeah. I guess, that is just a matter of taste. But again, when you cut something in the middle of your film that looks like a trailer, I guess you are absolutely right that I just need to accept it for what it is. Mm-hmm. And just accept that, man, every single time I try to like a like big budget or not big budget, but you know, like a mainstream ish mm-hmm. horror film, I don't know what it is about it that I find so repellent.
Well, I am exactly on the fence about this because I am not, if I'm really trying to be objective, I am so upset about their use of CGI in this film that I am straddling the fence, even with all the things that I love about this movie. And there is so many things. I haven't even delved 100% into a lot of the things that just really, really worked for me. And again, it's mostly as a King fan. They honored the tone. They honored the interplay. They honored so many things. And they switched it so much that it was gut-wrenching to me. But I totally understood why they had to do it, because there's a lot of shit in the book that just absolutely does never needs to be fucking filmed. And I'm not even talking about the teenage gangbang.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't feel the need to bring it up, but yeah, one part of this film that everybody knows absolutely cannot be in mm-hmm. this. And we did talk about it when we recorded the last one. And I think it is worth mentioning that if people have not read Stephen King, mm-hmm. a lot of his stuff is extremely problematic absolutely. By today's standards.
One of the things that they handle beautifully is a lot of the portrayals of teenage sexuality of any sort. You know, the actual portrayal of how kids really talk, react, and that type of thing, shown as a visual without making it something fucking weird.
Without being crude.
Yeah, without being weird, like being pervy weird. the casting was amazing because they could have fucking, if they would have cast anybody else for the female lead, anybody else, it wouldn't have fucking worked.
Oh, and Sophia Lillis is great.
Absolutely.
She's really, really good in Gretel and Hansel, too.
Yeah, but in this movie, if they would have cast somebody that was like, you know, bombshell, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it would. Yeah.
It would have been fucking wrong.
Absolutely.
And one of the difficulties for me is they aged everybody up. These kids would have been much younger. And that would have been even more problematic. They aged them properly so that it is acceptable for the words coming out of their mouth. If you hear what I'm saying, a lot of movies we've talked about before, it needs to make it okay for us to view. We're allowed to be uncomfortable, but we need to be uncomfortable for the right reasons.
Right. And as adults, again, I think it is... Again, wise to not completely sexualize a child, mm-hmm. but we all, if you are a actual adult, you understand we've all been teenagers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've all seen a teenage girl. We know exactly what they're thinking. Mm-hmm. We don't need to get too far into it. But again, you don't really need to shy away from it because if you're a regular human being, you don't go, ooh, halfway naked 13-year-old girls. Yes.
And they showed one of the things that I loved is their interpersonal relationships. They changed it a lot from the books to the movie, okay? But the semi-triangle between the two dudes and...
Oh, Ben. Ben's yeah. great. But, we haven't even talked about Ben, really.
Right, no, I will talk more about him. But what I'm saying is, as far as there was a small little, you know, a frisson of a triangle there. And when it broke, right... When it was shown that Ben wasn't gonna have that happen, okay. When they showed that happen, they showed it in a wonderful light because they didn't show it as the victor and a loser.
Right.
We're still friends, and that's not okay. Well, I'm happy for her. Okay. Does it suck? Yeah. But it wasn't shown as I hate everybody now, and it wasn't. It wasn't. The portrayal was wonderful. It showed their strength as a friend group.
Right.
It showed their solidarity regardless of, you know, interpersonal relationships, which strengthened my idea of when they did the ritual, you know, to vanquish, you know. It strengthened all of those things for me. And that's what really, really, really cemented this movie for me. And again... As a King fan, they changed it, they updated it, they fixed a lot of the problematic things and still gave, like, the purists, they threw all of the proper bones, which, again, is not a great layout for you, especially when they're speaking a different language and making the movie for a younger audience.
Yeah, and I'm going to be very honest, and again, yeah. This is... 100% subjective, my opinion. I really drop off a movie when the climax is a bunch of teenagers just beating up a clown with objects that they find.
I did not like that in the slightest.
Like, and I think that's silly, and it makes me want to stop watching it.
And I get why they did it. I don't want to get into detail, but I get why they did it. I just didn't like it. The best scares... Let's go back to I should know all of these names. I should have known names and attributes of characters. And I apologize, but I can't think of one motherfucker's name in there. The black kid.
Mike,
sorry. Horribly underused, yes. Mike one of the better scares is when he was in there and then he saw the fire behind the door and the hands coming out.
That is
the light.
A very good use of CGI. I will give them that. I think that's a good scare.
And it honors the book, but changes the story so much. It puts his guilt in a different spot. His guilt and his fears were different in the book. But they had to hang something on there, because if they, again, if they told everybody's story hugely, it would be too much. But again, I think the decision to split the adult and the kid scene was a bad decision. They could have split it into two movies, yes, and left a cliffhanger or whatever. But the back and forth of the character strengthens the backstories and interweaves them and makes everything make more sense. So I want to see how, again, I'm desperate to see how well they meld them together in the second one. I have high hopes. Again, everybody who I've talked to, all the reviews I've read, lead to the fact that it's great. And the box office returns on this tells me that, you know, I may know something about something, but I sure as fuck don't know anything about selling or making a big name movie.
No, because like I said, we don't do a whole lot of these, you know, big name whatever. And we tried to look back for a modern horror film. And I mean, this is at the top of, like, you know, as far as every modern horror film made within the last 10 years or so, this is number one. See it. And man, again, I don't know what it is. I fully at this point believe that it is just me. I do not like this.
I know, but again, if we judge it as a horror film, nah, fuck this film. Judging it as a character study with horror themes, this movie fucking rocks. But because we do specifically horror films, and if I'm really going to be as objective as I possibly have, this movie, my 100% opinion will hinge on the second film and how they handle a bunch of shit that they fucking need to answer for me as a fan right the fuck now. Because I've been a little iffy. I'm like, if they don't handle the second movie right, I'm going to come back here with egg on my fucking face, and I don't want to do that.
Right.
I'm just, again, to be objective, as a horror film, no. This doesn't hit the right horror hits. But again, people's opinion of Stephen King is a horror writer. I think of him as a sci-fi writer or a noir writer, you know, a creepy novel. But horror, yes, he fucking does that, and he does it great, but that's not what he's all about.
And I'm going to state for the record, at no point in the future do I plan on reading it.
Oh, no.
It is, what, 35,000 pages long? Something like that?
No. And fuck a bunch of... I will tell you, even as a fan, what Stephen King have you actually read?
A few.
Which ones?
I'm not getting into this discussion.
No, but I'm just curious because I have a little theory, and I'm going to see if I can throw a longer one at you that you might appreciate.
No, I'm not sitting and reading a 700-page book. I absolutely do not have time for that.
Okay.
No.
Just throwing that out there.
Like I said, I'm not the biggest Stephen King fan in the world, and there's a few of his books that I really, really like, but more that I've read that I went, oh, well, that's finally over. Good. I can move on.
I think I gave up at Bag of Bones. I'm like, I'm fucking done.
But...
Which cuts me out from being an actual Stephen King fanatic, because I'm like, I haven't read even a, you know, short story collection since Bag of Bones, which was what, 99, 2000, something like that.
You're a disgrace to us all.
And he's written a couple, two, three since then. I don't know.
Hey, James, can we be done with this? Do you have anything else to say about it?
I do, but, you know, for the sake of your sanity and the sanity of our listener, I'll stop now. You can push the button anytime you fucking want after I say this, which is, you can find us on...
Fucking what? How dare you just barrel past what I always say to you? You son of a bitch!
I was going to fucking steamroll right the fuck back.
Hey, James, where can people find us?
They can find us at Horror Vomit thefilmpodcast@gmail.com. They can find us on the Facebook and the Instagram. And give us the stars, all of the stars, and a 5-word.
Rude. I will never get over this. I'm going to hold a grudge about this for years to come. Can't believe you tried to just steamroll me.
Push
like
the
that.
Fucking button.
You piece
push
of
the
trash.
Fucking button.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to call you
push
trash.
It.
I love
push
you.
Push it!
You're a very good-looking man thing. And a very generous lover. And I'm trying to
push
get
the
to
button.
The button.
The
I'm
button.
Trying.
That's not
I'm,
it.
I know what I'm doing.
That's
to
not
I
it.
I know what I'm doing, Jared. Don't you question me.
That.